I just saw a quiet gem of a film that makes me want to go to Forest Park up in the mountains just outside Portland on the banks of the Willamette River, one of the largest urban forests in this country and the setting for a real-life story that is now the leaping-off point of this new little movie. If you live in Oregon, you know this story. It was told in the Oregonian and later books, including Peter Rock's novel My Abandonment. It's the story of a father and daughter who lived for years in this urban forest. The girl emerged healthy, bright. Social services relocated them, and then they disappeared. The new film, Leave No Trace, asks the question, what happened then? In this scene, Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie plays the girl. When she's first brought into the foster care system, other girls ask, what's she doing there?
I wasn't where I was supposed to be, so they took me away. Well, they don't think I was where I was supposed to be.
Okay, where were you?
With my dad, in the park.
So you were homeless then?
No.
Why else would you be living in the woods? Okay, if you had a home, they wouldn't have brought you here.
Well, they just don't understand that it was my home.
At another point, a kind stranger asks her, where does she live? Where is her home? And she says, with my dad. Leave No Trace is written and directed by Deborah Granick. She first made a splash in 2010 with Winter's Bone, which brought us Jennifer Lawrence as a teenage girl searching for a missing father in the Ozarks. So this may be familiar territory for Deborah Granick, who joins us now from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did you hear about the story? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was presented the novel, and the author is from the region, and I am attracted to regional literature and like to make films that are considered regional films, and the characters had an allure for me.
Yeah, talk about this park, Forest Park. It is a character in and of itself. It's this lush, you know, a lot of rain and moisture in that area.
The park is a treasure for any city that has like a big set of lungs on its outskirts, and it's hugely used for educational purposes. Kids are brought in early in their lives to be able to identify the trees, insects, and people hike. With that, it has some intense terrain, some, I would say, ravines and inner sanctum that's hard to reach. So with that would also come probably a very logical and enticing opportunity for some people who are unhoused to also dwell there.
Well, the young girl, Tom, and the father, Will, played by Ben Foster, this intense internal character. Do we know if the father in the real-life story was, as Will seems to be, a veteran who's struggling with a war experience?
The informants that we worked with to ask additional questions, some people in the town overside the other side of the bridge, St. John's, who knew of them, they understood him to be a veteran. And so that was just a seed to go on, and then we really tried to expand on that and work with some local veterans that could help maybe flesh out some of the story.
Well, talk more about how you did speak with this community of people who live in these public parklands.
There was one man who had lived for several years in a park who showed us some of his methodologies. And he was he had kind of a legendary quality because of his resourcefulness.
Right. You also spoke with an outdoor survival consultant, Dr. Nicole Apelian, who's from Portland.
Yes. She was able to select carefully from the many things that one would need to know to become a really successful outdoor survivor. She curated 5 skill sets that Ben and Tom could learn so they could become familiar with knives, how to use them safely. They could pick their own props to some extent with her consultation. So it was a really wonderful immersion, and that was something that Tom and Ben used extensively in their rapport with one another and in their actual on-screen functioning.
Dr. Apelian, people might remember her from the History Channel show Alone. She demonstrated her survival skills. So you have these two actors being informed by these real-life people who live on the fringes in these forests and this master survivalist. And in your mind, as the director and the writer, I'm reading that you pulled from other things too, you know, maybe Thoreau, maybe Shakespeare.
In Peter's book, Thoreau, Henry David, is acknowledged as an author that Will finds inspiration from, and it really infected me. I was thinking, gosh, there were Americans from all different decades, all different centuries that wondered these questions that have never been more electric. How little do we need to be happy? You know, what are the core things that we need to make a life worth living? And I was very inspired by the Marine journalist David J. Morris, who wrote the book The Evil Hours. And in between Thoreau and this wonderful journalist author, of course, I happened to just kind of fall into a production of The Tempest. And it was so clear to me that this daughter was so instrumental in grounding her father, you know, her father who was caught up in these emotional and psychological tempests as well as the literal ones of his make-believe island, and that staying responsible to her grounded him. And I felt this attraction to say, okay, you know what? Even in our ordinary lives, some of those forces still play out.
So Tom, the girl, and Will, her dad, become Prospero and Miranda from The Tempest as well. But there's a moment when she's starting to doubt. She adores her father, but starting to, you know, want the home that social services offers them, wants to have some of the friends and the pet rabbit, different things that she's seeing. Let's listen.
I think it might be easier on us if we try to adapt.
We're wearing their clothes, we're in their house, we're eating their food, we're doing their work. We have adapted. The only place we can't be seen is in this house.
And they do go off. Deborah Granik, here is where it's all imagined. Do you find yourself now wondering about the real-life father and daughter, and did you as you were writing this?
Oh, I couldn't help but wonder about the real-life family. And yet there was something that came to my brain over and over again, that they wanted to be undetected. And so for me, it became almost like a respect thing to not pry too far. Mm. The last thing they would want is investigative journalists coming at them or pursuing them. You know, there was a reason why they were living undetected. Mm. And that's so hard for us to grasp, you know, because we want to know. We're curious by nature. And here I am presented with this almost dilemma where I have to now just go into imagination because their life is a sealed story. At the time, she was a minor, so it was very important for the state to sort of seal her case and give her that privacy. Mm. So the rest was imagination. Mm.
But yet this is familiar territory to you in this idea of a veteran in particular who just cannot handle the modern world. I'm thinking of your documentary feature, Stray Dog, which is based on the true story of a veteran. You seem drawn to that as well.
I'm very drawn to it. I'm very drawn to being, you know, an American whose life has spanned two wars in which the veterans went through so much. We can't afford the amnesia, you know. So one of my, you know, my work tasks as a cultural worker and a scribe of my times is, right, is to take note of what we go through. With the documentary, working with a Vietnam era vet, Ron Hall, he was so astute and specific with trying to communicate what it was like to come of age in Southeast Asia and then what it was like for the ensuing decades to work with his conscience and to work with how hard it was to come back into mainstream society. So I do feel like this is one of my work tasks, honestly, is to take note of this and make sure that I include it as part of the experience that's in the story.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we've said that while there are people who are living, you know, under the ferns and on the fringe in the parks, there's also very much a community that they stumble across, and this in the imagined part, that's living in trailers and living in encampments. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them actually look like real people.
They are.
I mean, they are real people, but
But they really are of that village that's
really
depicted. Yes. It was an old logging encampment that was in a fairly remote area. And several decades ago, some people had re-inhabited it as a nudist colony. And they were absolutely non-conforming Americans who embraced a bohemian lifestyle. And, you know, they have workaday lives. They go out at 5 a.m. and do their day job. But many of them live in accordance to some things that matter to them. But it's also happening in very small dwellings with a very rich sense of community, which the crew and we all just keyed into that. And many of them were willing to participate in the film as the residents of that enclave.
Wow. The people sitting around the campfire singing. I was going to ask you, where is this magical place? But don't tell us.
Okay.
Let's keep it that way. That's writer-director Deborah Granik. Her new film, set in Oregon and based partly on a true story, a legendary story there, is called Leave No Trace, about a father and daughter who do just that. They disappear, leaving no trace. She imagines what might have happened. It opens in theaters tomorrow. Deborah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.